Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey.
And we are going to tackle the crucifixion of Jesus. There's going to be context clues, nerdy nuggets, and timeless truths all kind of mixed in. I'm probably not going to delineate between those three. I'm really just going to talk about the order of the coronation that would have happened for any emperor in the Roman world. And actually, just as a relic from history, like as an artifact from history, we actually have Nero's coronation from the day that emperor became Caesar, okay, of the Roman world. And I think that Mark is doing something really unique with the crucifixion of Jesus. I think Mark is framing the crucifixion of Jesus like a coronation, but I'll leave that up to you to decide. And that's what we're going to tackle today. I find this content remarkable and beautiful and compelling. There's a scholar who works on this. His name is Thomas Schmidt. And we're just going to kind of like work through this together. I don't know. Maybe you'll be convinced of this. Maybe not. We shall see. So let's dive in. Hey, if you haven't done the reading today, go ahead and pause this, stop the recording, stop the video, stop the audio, go read Mark chapter 13, 14, 15, and 16. And for those of us that have done the reading, let's jump in. All right. Two big things that I kind of want to do. I want to give you the four pillars of Hellenism. Now, on our Introduction to the New Testament course, Introduction to the Gospels course, I talk about these a lot. That's a really, really strong course, by the way. A lot of context, a lot of history, culture that helps us to actually appreciate what's happening in the Gospels. So there are four pillars of Hellenism. Okay, Hellenism really is a synonym for like Greek philosophy, Greek ideas. Okay. Aristotle is the person who mentors and educates Alexander the Great. So Alexander the Great is going to conquer a fourth of the known world. He's going to spread Greek philosophy and language all over the Western world. And Greek becomes the lingua franca of the day because of Alexander the Great. It's the reason why the New Testament is written in Greek. Is because of Alexander the Great's military conquests. There's four things that Alexander's going to incorporate as a part of his gospel, okay? Four pillars of Hellenism. Number one, every time that Alexander the Great would build a city, it would always have a gymnasium. The gymnasium didn't mean like where you do sports. A gymnasium was education. It's where people got educated. Two, there was always going to be an Asclepian, which is like for healing, so medicine. Three, there's always going to be a theater in like your classic Greek town or city because the entertainment was crucial. And then last, there was always going to be a Colosseum or sports. There's going to be an arena where competition happened, okay? And I would contend that as Mark is portraying Jesus, is a great teacher. Okay. So, Jesus would have excelled in the gymnasium. Two, Jesus can heal. Okay. So Jesus is one-upping the Asclepian. Number three, the crowds are consistently in Mark's gospel, amazed by Jesus. They're astonished by Jesus, which means that Mark is portraying Jesus as someone who's very, very entertaining. And then if you were to compete against Jesus in anything, you lose. Okay, Jesus is a winner in Mark's gospel. So Mark is portraying Jesus a particular way. And then we get to the crucifixion of Jesus. This really comes to a head. So there are nine steps that would make up an emperor's coronation. Okay, nine steps. And we're going to kind of go through those nine steps, and then we'll read Mark chapter 15, and we'll see if you're convinced that Mark is doing something here. There's a temptation sometimes in biblical studies to harmonize the gospels. So if Matthew says one thing and Mark says one thing, you try to find a way to harmonize the gospel. So like in in Matthew and Luke, Jesus isn't given wine mixed with myrrh. He's actually given vinegar, okay? And he's offered vinegar on like a hyssop branch, which in the ancient world would have been toilet paper. So, I mean, he's given like cheap wine on a stick with old toilet paper. And it's the most disgusting, grossest thing ever. However, wine mixed with myrrh was like super, super expensive. And in Mark's gospel, he's given wine before he goes to the cross. And a harmonization of the gospels to try to say, well, both are true. Really, that's the Western inclination in us to want things to be factual. For the Westerner, we equate facts with truth. But in the Eastern world, factual doesn't mean true. True means that it points to the truth, universal truth, truth that can save, truth that can deliver, set free. We're not going to try to harmonize. What we are going to say is that Mark has an agenda. And I think that it's going to be evident what Mark's agenda is as we continue through the content. So let's go through the 9 steps of a Roman coronation for an emperor. Okay, this all Caesars would have gone through this. And we have Nero's essentially like program, like his schedule from his coronation in good detail. And so let's do this. Number one, the first thing that would have happened at a coronation for an emperor is that the Praetorian Guard gathers. Okay, the Praetorian Guard gathers to hail Caesar as Lord and God. Number two, 3 things happen. Royal robes will be placed on the new Caesar that's being coronated. A wreath crown is placed on the Caesar's head, and a scepter is placed in Caesar's hand. Okay, number 3, there's a procession. They lead Caesar through a procession lined with incense, altars. So there's a procession. Number 5, Caesar is followed by a bull that's going to be sacrificed, and Caesar carries the instrument of death. That's number 4. Okay. Number 5, Rome was founded on 7 hills. You may be aware of this. And there's one hill called Capitoline Hill. Now, we may read that and think, oh, it's like Capitol Hill. No, Capitoline Hill, because the root word there is capite, which actually means head. They believe that Romulus's skull was actually the foundation of one of these hills, but that it wasn't a skull. It was actually like a severed head. It's a full head. And it's like distinctively not skull. It is head. It's like hair and like full face. It's not just the bone, but it's like the head, severed head. So Capitoline Hill, which would get translated in English as Head Hill. Okay. Head Hill. So number 5 is the Caesar goes to Head Hill, Capitoline Hill, is offered wine mixed with myrrh, but refuses it, pouring it out. Essentially kind of a boss move, saying like I'm self-sufficient. Okay. Number 6. Is the bull is killed, and Caesar pronounces death or life on a host of prisoners. Okay, so for one person, you get life, you get life, you get life, you get death, you get death, you get death. And this is to signify that Caesar has the power of life and death in his tongue. Okay, whatever he says goes. Number 7, the emperor ascends the steps of the temple with the high priest on his right and his commander, his army, on his left. Number 8, Caesar is acclaimed Lord and God as people sing his praises. And then number 9, everyone waits for a sign. Now, during Nero's coronation, there was a full eclipse, like a solar eclipse. And if you read accounts from Nero's coronation, you know, the sign was almost like a confirmation that this is our guy. Okay. The gods are behind this earthly leader. So with that, we are now going to go to Mark's gospel. Okay. Let me just kind of recap those really quick. Number 1 is the Praetorian Guard gathers. Number 2 is royal robes and a wreath crown. Okay. Number 3 is a procession. Number 4, Caesar's followed by the bull and he's holding the instrument of death. Number 5, they take him to Head Hill where he's offered wine mixed with myrrh but refuses. Number 6, a bull is killed. and Caesar pronounces death and life on a host of prisoners. Number 7, he ascends the temple with the high priest on his right and the commander of his army on his left. Okay, 8, Caesar is acclaimed Lord and God as people sing his praises. And then number 9, everyone waits for a sign. That's the 9 parts of a Roman emperor's coronation. I believe that what Mark is communicating, what he's showing us, not telling us, is that the moment of crucifixion is Jesus' coronation, which would be countercultural and would be a massive turnoff to any Roman. They would understand it, but they would understand this as so countercultural. This would be the radical introduction into the upside down kingdom that is the kingdom of God. And so let's actually now get into the text. Mark chapter 15, okay? Mark chapter 15, verse 16 says this: the soldiers led Jesus away into the palace. That is the Praetorium, aka Praetorian Guard, okay? And called together the whole company of soldiers. Really, a whole company of soldiers for a Jewish peasant from the backside of Galilee. Interesting. Okay, next, verse 17. They put a purple robe on him, then twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on him. This is eerily similar to the steps of a coronation so far. We're 2 for 2. Next, verse 18 would be a procession. And here's what we get in chapter 15, verse 20. And when they had mocked him, they took off the purple robe and put on his clothes and led him out to crucify him. So sounds like a procession to me. Number 4, Caesar's followed by a bull and he's carrying the instrument of death. We are going to go to Mark chapter 15, verse 21. A certain man from Cyrene, Simon, the father of Alexander and Rufus, was passing by on his way to the country, and they forced him to carry the cross. What is the cross? It's the instrument of death. Then they go to Head Hill, where, well, Caesar would have gone to Head Hill, Capitoline Hill, and would have been offered wine mixed with myrrh, but refuses. So let's see if that one lines up. Chapter 15, verse 22 and 23, it says this: they brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. Then they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. Guys, this is wild. Number 6, a bull is killed and Caesar pronounces death and life on a host of different prisoners. Let's go to Mark chapter 15, verse 24. It says this: and they crucified him, dividing up his clothes. They cast lots to see what each would get. Let's go to number 7. Caesar would ascend the temple with leaders on his right and his left. Says this in Mark chapter 15, verse 27. They crucified 2 rebels with him, one on his right and one on his left. The 8th thing that would happen in Caesar's coronation, or at least in Nero's coronation, is Caesar is acclaimed Lord and God. Okay, as people sing his praises. And this is what happens in Mark chapter 15, verse 29 to 32. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "So you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, come down from the cross and save yourself." In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. Let this Messiah, this King of Israel, come down now from the cross that we may see and believe." Those crucified with him also heaped insults at him. So this moment where Caesar is supposed to be praised and hailed as Lord and God, Jesus is insulted. So that's a massive curveball. And then lastly, everybody's supposed to wait for a sign. What do we have in Mark chapter 15, verse 33? It says this: at noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark is portraying Jesus as a coronated king. Mark is communicating to a Roman audience that the way Jesus is coronated as king is to suffer and die. This is the most antithetical, countercultural, swim upstream, like just odd thing. Like the power of this, that for a Roman audience that values power and authority and immediacy and popularity and so many things, Mark says, yeah, there's a coronation. Like, I'm going to put it in a format and in a language that you understand, but the structure's there, but the spirit that infuses this structure is totally like foolishness to the world. The wisest human would think this is foolishness, but it is the wisdom of God. And it is totally counterintuitive that if you want to be first, you become last. If you want to be great, you become the servant. If you want to live, you die. If you want to be coronated, you go to the cross. For a Roman audience, this is difficult. This is very difficult. This is difficult to read. This is difficult to accept. I am convinced that this is what Mark is doing. So I'll leave it to you to see if you are convinced that this is what Mark is doing. But that, and that is the entire gospel according to Mark. We covered it in 4 days. And because Mark gets his gospel from our man Peter, tomorrow we'll be diving into the gospel of Peter. We'll be in 1 Peter for 2 days, 2 Peter for 1 day. So the next 3 days, we've got the epistles of Peter. I can't wait to see you right here. Man, beautiful gospel, beautiful gospel. I think what Mark is doing is absolutely brilliant. And I think that his ability to translate truth to a culture that he really wants to reach is my timeless truth, that that's what we should be doing. We should be taking the story of Jesus, not compromising on the message of Jesus, but translating that message into a format that the cultures that we love and the people that we want to see evangelized can actually begin to comprehend what's going on in the story based on the format that we put it in. So with no further ado, I love you so much. I'll see you right here tomorrow. Proud of you. I love you. See you tomorrow. Peace.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at the Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.